Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Passus, an internet radio program conducted by Dr. Damian Goldberg from Los Angeles, California. Damian invites you once a week to share this space to reflect on your work life. How can we achieve results, satisfaction and well-being at work? How can we find balance between our work and personal life? Prepare for challenging dialogue with Dr. Damian Goldberg and his guests, who are thought leaders from all over the world.
Hi, welcome to Passos. This is Dr. Damian Goldberg, today from Los Angeles. For people who listen to us for first time, Passos, or STEPS, is a program that focuses on well-being at work. Our goal is to think and reflect and bring guests from all over the world to discuss how we can create organizations where people feel not only that they get results, but also that they create well-being satisfaction in their work life. And today I have a very special guest. The guest today is somebody that I really respect very much, is somebody that I admire. Janet Hardy is a colleague of mine, is a mentor of mine. She was the past president of International Coach Federation, and she mentored me and supported me in my current role as the chair of the board of the International Coach Federation. Also, Janet is the owner and the director of a coaching program for many years in Seattle, Invite Change. They also provide coaching and consulting services all over the world. Currently, I am also taking a class with Janet on mentor coaching with colleagues from India and parts of Europe. So it's great to have Janet with us here today. She has been working as a coach and as a consultant for many years, working with big corporations. And today, the discussion will be around well-being at work and how everyone is responsible to create that well-being. So Janet, welcome to our call today.
Thank you so much, Damian, and for your very generous welcome. I've so enjoyed being colleagues with you, and this is such an important conversation. I appreciate your leadership and hosting it and sustaining it for so long. It's great to be here.
Great. So, Janet, I want to start asking you about your – I know you have been working as a coach, executive coach, training coaches for many years, and also you get to work with executives all over the world. And my experience, my first question to you is about your experience in terms of when you work with your clients. What do you see as some of the key challenges that they have in creating this well-being at work?
You know, the very first challenge begins with each person individually, especially when I'm working at the more senior levels of the organization, not just the CEO, but members of the executive team. And I've seen this in small family-owned businesses all the way up to multinational organizations, that while the scope of responsibilities that they're involved with and the size of the budget and the number of people and the reach around the globe is different, the core dilemma is not. How do we embrace the complexity and the chaotic pace of change without losing connection to what's most important to us, to our core values, to our deeply held principles of what satisfies us, what we know is our authentic contribution in the workplace in favor of something outside of us that seems to be never achievable, a little bit like going through the revolving door of life, right? If I just get this next project done, if we get this next round of funding, if we're able to acquire this next company, if we're able to achieve this change process to our culture, right? The list goes on and on and on. And if we are seduced by that constant level of achievement as the next answer to managing that chaos, the dilemma just perpetuates. And really, that the secret is stopping and pausing, and as you said about the purpose of the program, to think and to reflect and to remember that all of us are so much more than the things we do in our lives.
Yeah, and what you're saying is one of the most rewarding pieces of work that I have to do too. When you work with your clients,
and they really can connect what is really important to them. And when they remember that, suddenly who they show up at work is different.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I was working with a leadership team in a multinational manufacturing organization last month. You're reminding me of this particular conversation. And in the discussion with the sponsor, it was an opportunity for me to prepare for a session with he and his leadership team. And he was feeling some concern about his team's well-being. They've been working really hard against extremely tight deadlines, and there were a couple of more decisions coming down the pike that he knew were going to be received poorly, and he wanted the team to have some time to be with each other before they had to go and cascade it into the organization. So that was the purpose behind having me come in. And as we were talking, I was exploring with him, and to me, this is one of the things that each of us needs to learn to risk in order to feel like we belong, is how much of him, right, the totality of him, we might say how much of his potential does he permit to express itself in the workplace? And he said, oh, I keep a really clear boundary between my own personal beliefs and who I am personally and what my work is as a leader in the organization. And so I invited him to look at, you know, what was the belief system that he had around the positive impact of that, of having that separation, and what had that developed for him as a leader. And rather than making it right or wrong, we were simply creating some awareness about the choices he'd made about how he was showing up. And then I said to him, so what I'm hearing you describe is that success equals only bringing part of you to the job. And there was dead silence. And he said, yeah, that is what I just said, but that's crazy. It's not right. Clearly, if I bring more of myself to the job, there's more resource for me on the job. And I said, yeah, that's usually how that works. So if you were going to shift that, what would you have to risk in order to bring more of yourself to work? And he thought about that for a minute, and he said, wow, that's exactly what I'm asking the team to do, but I'm not doing it. No wonder, because they're following my example, and I'm not risking bringing all of my humanity, all of my vulnerability, all of my creativity. I've got it caught in a box that I've defined as what's acceptable, and it's choking me. That's why I don't feel so good.
And by the way, the question that you asked, I think it was a great question. I think for people who are listening to us today, Janet, that is a really good question in terms of what are we willing to risk also in our organizations. And I was watching a movie a couple of days ago, and that's coming up to my mind. I don't know if you get the chance to watch the Tarantino's movie, Kill Bill. And there is one scene that talks about Superman. And I thought, what a great metaphor. What they say, like in a dialogue, it says that Superman, he was born as Superman. But in order to be able to be part of society, he has to become Clark Kent. And that in that way, he was in some way hidden his true personality just to be able to be with everybody else. But he, in some way, was not he who really was. Just he was not that courageous. The character of Clark Kent is not a very courageous or brave person who is willing to take risks. And I like that metaphor when you were talking about risk, because to what extent we are willing to take that risk to be who we really are and to be authentic and to be vulnerable, then as a result that will create more well-being and satisfaction.
Right, exactly. And not only will we create more well-being, but we will replace the incongruence. Right? We all know it. It's in the airwaves, and it's a bit of invisible ways of thinking. But when somebody isn't bringing all of themselves, when we're around them, we know that. We just have that sixth sense that there's something not being said here. something right underneath the waterline. We can't quite put our finger on it, but that person isn't being fully transparent. And so we tend to walk on eggshells and be a little cautious and maybe not bring all of ourselves, right? So it creates a reciprocity in the organization of less than full potential, and it begins to be the norm. We don't disclose all of who we are. So now the whole culture has it, but it's unconscious. Right? In response to our discomfort when there's an incongruence between what people say, be all you can be the best you can be, bring all of yourself to work, and who they're being.
Yeah.
So
and
we can remove that incongruence, right? Yeah,
and I think that sometimes it's an unconscious, as you were saying, and sometimes it's about difficulties in really accepting or taking the risk or being vulnerable. And sometimes people have bad experiences that make them stop and being afraid. But when we live with that fear, our work environment cannot be a really one that will bring satisfaction and well-being to us.
Oh, so wise, Damien, what you've said there. You know, to me, something I learned fairly early on in my career from some fairly painful experiences of bringing all of who I was without any discernment about how to create relationship before I was doing that is that, you know, fear, the amount of fear is the amount of longing to love. I mean, ultimately, fear is simply giving us the shadow expression of the love we long for in order to belong in an organization. And this habit, it's a really disempowering habit that we have of trying to read the tea leaves. Which way is the wind blowing? You know, how does that person do it? I'll do it the way they're doing it. And each time we do that, we become innocent to the organization. We're allowing the status quo to guide our choices, even when it is in conflict with who we are, what we believe, what our value system is, what probably the reason they hired us in the first place to come into the organization. We don't get to bring that because it doesn't fit. Even though that's what they wanted us to do, the organizational life is saying it isn't what they want us to do. So we're innocent in order to belong rather than being guilty, systemic principle, to stand in our own authority and remember that nobody can take away who we are. What does Dr. Seuss say? You are you. It's truer than true. There'll never be anybody who is like you. And when we can stand in our own authority, somebody else can too. Now you've got two whole people contributing instead of part of one and part of the other trying to figure each other out. What a waste of energy.
Definitely. Well, this is really, really interesting because to the extent that we can be aware of some of these things that we do, that what you said before can be unconscious, we can be much more effective in creating conditions so our job environments are much empowering. Now based on your experience, what habits have you seen that disempower people to really bring that authenticity to their workplace?
You know, I think that for people who are in a leadership role, I want to take a page out of Margaret Wheatley's books. So she's an anthropologist by training and does a lot of work in the leadership development space. It's W-H-E-A-T-L-E-Y, Margaret Wheatley. And she has a whole series of essays she writes about being willing to be disturbed. And when I first read it, I thought, wow, that's a big concept. And the more that I have worked with it with my own clients and, frankly, in my own life, in my own leadership capacities, I realize that the only learning that happens for me is when I am willing to be disturbed. We used to call it beginner's mind, right? Come with a beginner's mind and it will set you free. And I still believe that. And so that would be a habit. You know, can I be in a beginner's mind and shut off the habit I have of trying to find the right historical context I have for what somebody's saying to me, right? Trying to put it in its right, I don't know, think like library, putting the book back on the stack, right? If instead I'm listening and engaging with someone available for something that doesn't fit with my context, right? If I could get excited about something that disturbs me, like I fundamentally disagree with this person's point of view, now that's juicy. Something creative and innovative can happen there. And as long as I am able to stay in my own center and not take it personally that they don't agree with me, I'm empowering them to stay in their center. Both ideas have validity. And when we put the two in the pot together, wow, we have a whole other creation that can emerge. And this is what organizations require in order to have sustainable innovation happen. It's all of each other coming, not pieces and parts held back out of politeness. Right? So that politeness to belong in an organization to me is toxic and a cancer, and really gets in the way of being able to unleash the full potential of the workforce.
Very powerful ideas. I like this idea of embracing this being disturbed, which is not it's very new to me. I have not heard that before, Janet. Mm. And I think, wow, what an interesting concept. And yeah. What are the consequences of being willing to embrace? And it's interesting because disturbing may mean different things to different people. What disturbs, right. Because maybe what disturbs me would not disturb you. But, and what I'm thinking about, what would disturb me? And I know that's one of the things that sometimes in the organizational settings, what disturbs me, and may some people who are listening to us may relate to that, is the unknown. Like, if I know what is happening and how things are going to be working, things are great, but suddenly there is a big unknown and there is not certainty. And nowadays, there is not any certainty about anything. So it's really challenging.
Right.
This need to know, or even sometimes to control to some extent, the future or the activities or what is coming up. So I know that for me, what is disturbing is what something suddenly changes and there is this unknown, and being willing to embrace and see the unknown as something positive instead of something that may not be positive. It really helped you to relate completely different to this disturbance.
Yes. So let's link that back to the previous comment about fear being the shadow of love. In other words, when we say we need to know or we need to control in the face of a change being presented to us, what we're really saying is I'm not willing to not be loved. I'm not willing to not belong. So what I know how to do is to take my knowledge and my experience and all of my skills, and I'm going to put some boundaries up around this for myself so I can stay in love and not in my fear. And kind of the interesting paradox here is that, you know, the change is going to happen. It's never in our control. There is no such thing as control. It's made up thing we do in our heads. And it's not so much the change itself that's the problem. It's do we believe after the change that we will be at least as well off as I was before the change, right? That's the uncertainty. And well off in the form of will I belong? Will there still be love for me here? And what I think we make a big mistake about, and I love Bob Keegan's work around the immunity to change, because I think he starts to go in this doorway. And Boyatzis, too, around paying more attention to the positive than the negative. So if we replace knowledge and control, the need to know and the need to control, with a choice to be spontaneous, a choice to trust our agility, choice to exercise our imagination and be part of creating the future that this change is asking for, now we're back in what I call sovereignty, right? I'm in charge. I am authoring my life, and I'm doing it with integrity to my core value system and really allowing myself to see, what is my condition of satisfaction, just to borrow a phrase from Fernando Flores, right? What is it, then, in my promise to be an employee in this organization that will sustain my sense of self and wholeness here, and to have the voice to speak it? So having a habit of pausing to figure out, what do I really want? What is satisfaction for me? And being courageous to speak it as part of the negotiation. When we're in action towards that future and trusting our agility, that's what we'll create. When we're in inaction, controlling, resisting, keeping attached to the past, that's when the fear takes over, and we won't be loved because we actually will end up being the outcast.
Mm-hmm. What you're bringing is a really good opportunity for us to reflect on how in our work environment, and everybody who is listening to us, Janet, have different work environments, how is this fear playing to us in terms of limiting us to have that reality that we really want? So many times there are things that may, we're talking about control as something that we create in our head, and at the same time, what we can develop some awareness to help us with that awareness to create that situation that we can belong, that we can have that love without that fear that can be in our way.
Exactly. And it's easier for you and I to say it than it is for each of us individually to face it and do it. It is a courageous act to live from our own sense of self-authorship. You know, most of our lives are spent being pat on the head because we did something somebody else expected of us.
Mm-hmm.
And when we break out of that mold and we say, hang on, I want to live life on my terms, right? And that's one of those new choices that helps restore access to our own sense of unlimited potential. And we can come to that in small ways, a little, you know, one small step at a time. It might be, I'm not coming in at 7:30, I'm coming in at 8, and I'm going to walk to work. I'm not going to, you know, get on the freeway and ride in my car. You know, small things, small acts of sovereignty, of self-authorship that help us remember that we really are a choice all the time. And as we get stronger and being able to make well-being choices for ourselves, when it really counts, we already have a muscle that knows how to work. We can stretch it a little bit more. Then we can say, I understand it's important to relocate from where we are to 1,000 miles away. And let's be thoughtful about how we have that be an inspired choice for our team by doing the following things, right? If I'm living in fear, I'm not going to say that. I'm going to hope I'm the one that doesn't get relocated. But if instead we see it as an opportunity for us to be authoring how that change unfolds, now we begin to have our courage and our inspiration, right, to be inspirited in the breath of spirit, then we have our experience of knowing how to be self-authoring because we've been doing it in all these other little ways. Now we become part of the change instead of the effect of the change.
Mm. You have done a lot of work on inner authority, sovereignty. It's difficult for me to pronounce that in English. I think for some English speaking, they cannot pronounce it either.
You said it beautifully, sovereignty.
That's one of the areas of your expertise, and you have been studying it and publishing and talking about it. And I think that maybe when we tap into our inner authority, we can really create around us ways of thinking and being that can make a big difference in terms of how we live our lives. Is there anything else that you would like to add around that? I think that we need to start wrapping up our show today. Is any ideas about how we can work on
you
that?
You know, a metaphor. So the word sovereign, so the adjective is sovereignty, right? But the word sovereign means ruler. And when we think about this in terms of the ruler within, right, our internal king and queen, and any of the work in the journey of consciousness and adult maturation talks about being able to recognize that all of what we had in our families lives inside of us. And as we are adults, we begin to learn how to be our own confidants and to be our own, I don't want to say parental figure, that's not really what I mean, but to be a wise one, to be an experienced one, and also to allow time for the tender moments and the softer selves who can appreciate the beauty and the aesthetic out in the world, that all those parts of us are present. And when we tap into all of them, we are tapping into the to what I think is the soul, the soul's journey to wait for the rest of us to grow up enough so it can express its own voice. And this is a DNA thing. You know, if you look at the monarch butterfly, monarch is a synonym for sovereign or ruler. The monarch butterfly returns home to its origin, where it was gestating in the cocoon. Now, how the heck does it do that? Oftentimes, it's more than 2,000 miles. It knows it instinctively. It's in the DNA to go back to their roots in order to continue and perpetuate the species. Well, guess what? We have that too. We've just forgotten in all the noise and the excited pace that we live in, we've forgotten that when we stop and allow a moment of silence and really ask the question interiorly, we have access to an unlimited resource of wisdom of us, right for us, putting each of us in our place of best potential and making our choices from that. That's what will change organizational well-being when individuals begin doing that.
That's really profound, and I really appreciate, Janet, you accepting the invitation to participate today in our show. I think your wisdom is really making a big difference for everybody who is listening to us today. So to wrap up, I want to thank you. Maybe you want to give your way for people to reach you if they're more interested in this work that you are doing, how they can reach you.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you. So it's Janet, J-A-N-E-T, dot Harvey, H-A-R-V-E-Y, at invitechange.com. And I would love to hear from anybody that wants to comment about our conversation today and encourage you to go to www.invitechange.com and see our coach certification and our advanced coach trainings. We have 12 different courses that we offer to help people work with leaders and work with groups and teams and organizations on these principles of transformative coaching.
Great. Well, I highly recommend Janet. I had the opportunity to work with her. She's extraordinary. And I really appreciate your time today and being willing to work with me and talk about this very interesting and important topic that we covered today. So thank you one more time. And for everybody who are listening to us, I want to invite you to share this link with your colleagues, with your friends. You can download them from our website at goldbarconsulting.com or also in our social media, in the LinkedIn account at Damian Goldbar or in the Facebook, in the fans page, in the Goldbar Consulting Group. Thank you for joining us, and we will be in communication, and we will listen to each other next week. Thank you, Janet, one more time.
Thank you, Damian.
This is the end of PASOS, conducted by Dr. Damian Goldberg. Thanks for sharing this program with us today. We hope you find today's conversation challenging and stimulating. You can download this program and share with your colleagues in our website.